Menders, Episode 23. Make room for a new approach to change management with Daniel Huang.
So there's a famous quote around just culture eats it for strategy for breakfast. So all the strategy we try to create, all the plans we try to create, at the end of the day, it's really about creating this culture. And what is this culture that we're creating? And in the healthcare systems I worked in, a lot of them have a culture of safety, a culture of kind of just high patient experience. You can go on and on and on. But I think I like to go back to that culture of safety. And I think usually in medical systems, it's about literal safety, like just don't trip, don't put spill hazards. But what about like emotional safety?
You're listening to Menders with clinical psychologist and leadership consultant, Dr. Nicola DePaul. Each week, get a dose of real-world inspiration from free-thinking leaders, top clinicians, healthcare innovators, and myself. Looking for quick fixes or standard management tools? Try someplace else. Motivated to maximize the resilience and diversity of your team, sustain your momentum as a leader, and transform your healthcare system? Welcome to Menders. Welcome to Menders. Today we have Daniel Huang. Daniel, you come from a management consulting background and you're currently working for a life sciences startup. And I've invited you here today really just to explore some ideas about, what in healthcare's approach to change management isn't working so well. Can we think about some of the impacts of stressful experiences or global events on our organizations and on our people, how those are impacting clinician well-being, health systems functioning. So just some of those big picture questions. And I'm so delighted to be able to have this conversation with you today.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you. So I'd love to invite you to share a bit about yourself and your journey. How did you get to where you are now? What's that looked like for you?
Why don't I start with just 2020 pandemic happened.
Yes.
And it was a moment I had just kind of left my consulting career. I spent 15 years working for a mid-market consulting firm and I had specialized in change management. So it was kind of the peak of my career. I decided to venture out on my own and the pandemic happened. And in that moment, it also gave me the time and space to reflect, work on myself. I've been on that healing journey for the past 2+ years. And now I'm looking back and reflecting on the work that I've done in the past in this change management space. And I think there's a lot that we've gotten wrong. Just as I'm doing my own healing, I'm realizing there's so much that we didn't do in the mechanics of change management, especially in the healthcare space.
Yeah, I guess I really identify with that profound transformation or just the stop of 2020 for myself. I think that's when I personally was willing to acknowledge I was totally burnt out by my healthcare career and made a lot of transitions to move away from that. So,
and we all had to just work so much. It was a go, go, go world up until 2020 when the world was completely put on pause. And for some of us, I think we kind of looked back and said, oh my gosh, I don't want to be doing in that go, go world again. What is this new world going to look like?
Yeah. So what did you start to notice in terms of like the change management piece? Like what clued you into the fact that what we were doing wasn't working?
I think because I was in a go-go space, I spent most of my time in my headspace. And change management, project management, all that stuff is very logical driven, right? So if we do these deliverables, then people will adopt the change. But people aren't machines, right? People have emotions, people have feelings. And so most of the time we're missing the kind of that heart component, right? Like how do we connect to the emotional being? And most of the practice in that space is very mechanical in being. We're trying to get machines to do things faster. We're trying to lean out a system. But looking hindsight and back, it's a system of people. And I think you got to treat people as an organism, treat people as a being that's right in front of you.
So what allowed you to see things differently? Because I have not heard what you just shared from many people working in change management. And I don't think I see a lot of self-reflection. And I'm not a change management expert myself, but within my healthcare system, I do have a fair bit of interaction with people who are. So I'm just curious, what empowered you to shift your perspective?
I started therapy in 2020 with the intention of, I'm going to work on my mental health. I'm going to work on my sleep a little bit so that I can be more productive, sell more work, do more business. That was my intention. Where I really ultimately landed was kind of uncovering some hidden traumas I carried with me, worked on my own mental health healing. And in that healing journey, it got me a moment to reflect on myself, all those traumas that I carried within myself. I started seeing the world differently, right? I started seeing the world as more colorful, as emotional, less machine-like. And the more I do that work, the more I realize, looking back now, all this expertise, this trying to gain power, just this, it's very ego-driven. And in a lot of the therapies I worked on was resulted in just this, what's called ego death, right? So that voice that's constantly telling me to be better, try to succeed, that voice just disappeared. And at this point, I have the ability to look at people as who they are, look at people as needing, right? All the basic needs. Think of my 7-year-old running over here, his inner child needs. We all have that inner child within us.
Hey, if you're listening to this and you're not sure how to get started to address burnout and create a culture of well-being in your organization, and you're looking for a roadmap and someone to support your team through this process, listen up, because this is for you. Investing in your people is the smartest thing your healthcare system can do. Whether you have a tiny system or a large, complex department, there are focused actions you can take to transform your organizational culture from burnout to well-being. I work with leadership teams to simplify and demystify this process so that you can feel really good about the efforts you're putting out in the world and so confident that your investments in employee engagement and team well-being will pay dividends. Head on over to mendinghealthsystems.com and join me today.
And so when I'm practicing change management, I never consider about what the inner child needs. Like that just sounds completely insane and crazy, right? But in my own journey today, I start looking at people and what do they fundamentally need? And how do we fulfill that need? And until you start filling that hole, we're actually just making the problem worse by imposing more change on top, putting new systems in, making the process more efficient. All of that is just triggering that inner child.
So what does that actually look like when you approach someone from that perspective of like deeply seeing them as human and deeply seeing the needs that they have or the basic needs that they have?
Yeah, let me start with myself before I start critiquing other people. For myself, as I am a child of refugees. My parents were the Vietnamese boat people. So after the war ended, they left Vietnam on a little small riverboat out in the open sea. They were lost for 7 days, attacked by pirates, gunfire, machine guns, you know, all this horrific stuff that you can think of happened to them. My mom was pregnant with me during that time. So that's my trauma that I carry. And so looking back, imagining myself working in that healthcare boardroom, you know, someone's redlining a document, someone's criticizing something internally within my body, like I was experiencing a war environment. And, you know, like just most of what we do, the stuff that we do that's not life and death really is never rarely life and death. So when we're redlining a document, people shouldn't feel threatened. It's just work, right? It's just the stuff that we're doing. But I acknowledge, and kind of in hindsight, looking back, you know, when I'm working in those presentations, when someone's criticizing something, I went into my little corner. I got defensive and I got just, blood was boiling. Everything was just like danger, danger, danger. And so when people are operating that environment, we're now not operating at our highest brain level. We're operating at just that basic survival instinct. And I think my opinion is, I think that's how the corporate environment has always been, right? Everyone's just in their survival state. And it seems like whenever you're getting clash, you're getting conflict, is because we're not seeing each other as humans. We're just seeing threats in front of us.
I definitely can identify with that from a personal level, and also from interactions that I've had where, you know, I had this experience recently. I made a comment, was talking with someone, and, you know, they came back to me and and basically said, like, wow, that was really hurtful what you said. And I was so blown away. And we had a great conversation and really resolved it. But it allowed me to realize, like, sometimes my behaviors or how I am acting or the way that I put myself out there or say something can be harmful or not, like, thoughtful, kind, you know, not created with, I think, generosity or with, like, the best interests of that person in front of me, like their well-being. So it was a really powerful moment to me to make me realize, like, I need to, of course, care for myself and also really be more thoughtful about how I'm approaching my interactions with other people too.
You know, like, I love that, like, example, because whenever I see something like that, I always want to go back and reflect the mirror, right? In your mindset for that day, like, what do you need? Not necessarily what does the other person need? Because usually how you react to a situation is a reflection of what just this inner child, this inner being of you is desiring and seeking. It might be anger. It might be just this energy that's exploding out. And usually we're trying to go fix the other person saying, hey, you need to be less emotional, or hey, you got to pull yourself together. Flip that mirror around. Most of the time, it's my reaction. How I'm bringing this energy to this world is a reflection of the state of my own being in that moment. And I would say, like, I try not to bring that too much because most people aren't ready to have that kind of conversation, you know, because we're in this machine, we're in the system, and most people aren't ready to step out of that yet. But my goal is to be able to transform that at an organizational level.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is so powerful. And I'm really resonating with what you said because, and I hadn't thought of it in the moment when I gave you the example, but then you were asking, well, what did you need? And it's really true. It was a day I didn't get a lunch and, you know, I can't remember what else was going on, but my needs weren't being met, my basic needs. And, you know, unfortunately, I think in healthcare, that kind of situation happens pretty
so much
often. And, you know, we're also often expected to perform at a high level while ignoring some of our basic needs.
Well, in healthcare, it's a very, like, we're trying to save lives. We're trying to help others, right? We're putting others before ourselves. And I've seen so many healthcare workers burn out or just, you know, they're just trying to sacrifice themselves to save others. And it's a long game. It's not a one at a time.
And we don't usually end up, I think, being able to fully help the people that we're working with either when we're coming from that really depleted place or not kind of noticing or acknowledging our own experience.
Right.
So I know you're working in a slightly different field right now, but I am curious, have you thought about the alternative to change management or, like, how we could, because systems are always going to have to change. We need to help people with that. And I know that in your past, you've worked with healthcare systems with pretty significant medical record and other kinds of changes or transitions. So, I mean, what are your thoughts about that? How could we do things differently from that systemic level?
Well, just to do a little bit of credentializing myself, just I worked on an Epic upgrade, right? So it's a major, large healthcare system, and they were upgrading from an old, it was probably a mainframe type system to Epic, and they were integrating, so very complex. And so many of these projects happen all over the country, right? And so there's always a cookie cutter way of doing it. Everyone's always brings in tons of consultants. We're trying to implement a big system. Here's a change management methodology that gets laid on top. And we forget the human element. We forget the workers that actually have to go in and input in the system, the schedulers that have to schedule the patients, and ultimately the patients that have to be interacting in the system. And so we make it more complicated than it really needs to be, right? We're building this mountain of a molehill. And as a consultant, like, we make money whenever we create complexity, right? Because it creates more hours and more work and more stuff that needs to get done. But at the end of the day, all we're doing is creating a system that helps us interact with patients more efficiently. And ideally, it's creating more human-to-human interaction, like more doctor time with the patient, more nursing time. Patient gets scheduled a little bit easier. If I were to do it slightly differently, I think it's that there's the quote that culture eats strategy for breakfast. I'm not sure if you heard of it yet, right?
I am. haven't, but I love that.
So there's a famous, you know, quote around just, you know, culture eats it for strategy for breakfast. So all the strategy we try to create, all the plans we try to create at the end of the day, it's really about creating this culture. And what is this culture that we're creating? And in the healthcare systems I worked in, a lot of them have a culture of safety, you know, a culture of kind of just high patient experience. You can go on and on and on. But I think I like to go back to that culture of safety. And I think usually in medical systems, it's about literal safety, like just don't trip, don't put spill hazards. But what about like emotional safety? What about the space I need to say, I'm really scared that you're bringing forward the system and it's changing the way I do my work and I might not know how to do it. And I'm afraid. And so creating that space for people to express themselves, to be able to work through that, I'm going to use the jargon, that adoption curve, right? Work through the curve. But we ignore that piece of it where we mechanically say, well, you need to do training, check these 10 boxes, and here's your certificate and go forth and do the work. And we walk away. But what if we spent all more of that time? What if we spent 80% of the time creating that culture where we have emotional safety, where we can express our fears, express our concerns, and then see each other as colleagues, trust each other, you know, work with the systems. There's just so much. The system is very combative. It's designed like the implementers are coming in to make a change, and now we have to fight the people and fight the contracts and the unions to make this change happen. You know, like ideally, I'd like to see us more in a circle of humans trying to move this forward. And I know the integrator in me would want to say, like, well, how exactly would you do that? And I think that's the ego speaking, right? That's the ego pushing back and saying, I don't want to do that because that's the touchy-feely stuff. That's the stuff that's hard. And I'd rather just focus on getting these checkboxes done so I can feel accomplished, feel like something's happening.
I've been thinking a lot about how do we help people make changes and how, like, I do some consulting work or some work with healthcare leaders to really try to move towards culture of well-being for their clinics or their departments. And I guess part of me really wants this really complex answers. Like, okay, there's got to be 57 steps and it's like all of these different things. And I'm definitely not trained to do any of that. So, you know, so that's I have all kinds of, you know, my own imposter syndrome or thoughts around that. And then honestly, the more that I think, the more that I actually do the work or really think about it, it's like, okay, it comes down to just relationships and just listening and then just being responsive to the human needs in front of you. So it's like, for me, everything else falls away. And that doesn't make any of those basic elements easy, but it does make it really clear. Like, it's very messy. But if you're willing to just step into the relationship, that really can, I think, powerfully change things and improve, I think, how people feel cared about.
I would say, you know, I've almost gone off in the deep end in the sense of like I am approaching a level of spirituality when it comes to doing this work. And I've noticed just with my own children, right? I have a 13-year-old. And whenever they're stressed, I notice that if I come in a calm state, if I create that emotional space so that all that overflow that this 13-year-old has, like I have the space within my cup to take it on. The tension goes down. You know, they get calm. We get into a space. Now we can have a dialogue on how do we problem solve this? And I know it's a 13-year-old, but the reality is like most of us as adults, we're running out just like the same 13-year-old. Like we are very explosive. We're just like, I'm angry that this is happening to me. And so the answer isn't to logically solve the problem in that moment. Because I know my 13-year-old, if I try to logically solve the problem, it's not going to work. But I know that if I create that space, if I, as the parent, I can create that space. And so the corollary is as the health system leader, as the project manager, as a person that's leading this change, if I can create the space, then the organization has the container for which to spill out their concerns, their worries. If I'm working one-on-one with my leadership team, can I come into that space calmly and kind of lower that tension down? And so now the vibrational energy of this entire group changes. And mystically, I think, you know, that energy spreads across the system. Now everyone is in a better state. now we can solve the problem because the problem isn't that hard. It's all that energy that we hold within ourselves that makes it hard and makes it complex.
So how do you help leaders or the project managers, the change management folks, how do you help them start to even see the benefit of that? You know, tuning in, being present with themselves, and then creating that space.
I did some work with a correctional institution at the top leadership team, and one of the leaders, she was into meditation. And it was incredible to see this group of leaders. You know, you would think that these are gruffy guys, you know, that they're running a correctional institution. And yet they're all there meditating together. She shifted the entire culture, right, just by bringing in that practice. And it wasn't some new age meditation where I was like really out there. It was very basic, just mindfulness breathing, doing some breaths. And they started every meeting that way. You know, and I worked at another healthcare system that was religious in nature, and they started with a prayer, right? And so not all organizations can pray, but, you know, some type of mindfulness practice that starts at every meeting. So we start with that intention. We set the intention. What are we here to try to accomplish? We see each other as humans. We get that vibrational energy back to normal. And I'm sure you and I, you know, you've worked in health systems, and we know that, you know, we're running from meeting to meeting, and there's really no time, and everyone's just trying to get to one meeting, and every meeting spilling over. There's no time. I can't even go to the bathroom because we're trying to get to that next meeting. And so what if, rather than trying to go faster to get more productive, what if we all collectively choose to go slower and invest that, let's say, 10 minutes in that meeting, right? So everyone can get their breaks. Everyone can fulfill their biological needs. And then we do the meeting in a more calm, human way.
Oh, I want to work for that organization. That sounds amazing.
And the magic is, it doesn't need to happen at a system level. It just needs to happen with one individual. So all it takes is one individual to start a practice, and that practice will spread, right? So if everyone's like, oh my gosh, I just came out of this meeting, I feel better, they're going to go to the lunchroom, they're going to go to the water cooler, they're going to share it with others. One person literally can spread this in an organization.
Yeah. Wow. I'm feeling kind of internally convicted by what you just shared, because I am involved with several meetings. And, you know, I have not, I think, taken the time to try to really thoughtfully engage in that kind of way, or even create that space. And I'm just thinking about how, or feeling how powerful that would be, and what a breath of fresh air the experience would be for the people who are participating. And just how much more nourishing, like everyone would want to go to that meeting.
And for those that are still in their heady space, the beauty is there's so much clinical data out there and research on keeping a calm central nervous system, right? Calming your nervous system, heart rate variability, like all this data, all the scientific research is showing, you know, more sleep, calmer environments, lowering that tension down, less stress just makes us more human, makes us better. Mm-hmm. And so it's not like we're proposing something that has no backing. There's so much data already in the space. You simply have to act upon it.
Yeah, I think it is so tempting, though, for us, particularly in healthcare, to get caught up in the importance, perhaps, of being busy, mm-hmm. and in finding meaning in performance. You know, well, I saw this many patients. How many did you see? Or I, you know, whatever it is, which can, I think, get competitive, and or even just internally competitive. You know, I know this is true for myself. Finding my meaning from how much I've done instead of, you know, the quality of my interactions, or even simply acknowledging like, hey, I took 5 minutes for myself and it was lovely. And I was able to really celebrate that. Like, that is not, you know, that's not the status quo, or that's not even the norm for me. And I'm like trained as a mindfulness facilitator.
Right.
And even I, you know, or I, in addition to, I think, many others, struggle with that.
You know, that really brings me back to kind of the story I shared about being a traumatized child of refugees. That my parents literally were running away from danger, right? And so most of my life, I lived in that state of run, run, run. And run wasn't like literally running. It was doing work in that corporate environment, right? Going from meeting to meeting, filling my day up with every little moment is filled up with productivity. That is just a signal that we're running away from something. What are we running away from? And so I guess I would pose the question to our listeners and yourself and myself is, when I'm on that run, what's deep inside that I'm avoiding that feeling, right? What am I avoiding? Because I know, like, whenever today I see someone that's constantly just overworking themselves, I sort of question, it's like, you know, what traumas are you hiding within there? You know, what are you avoiding feeling? Because I do know it's very uncomfortable for me because I don't like slowing down, because when I slow down, I have to actually feel it. And it's very uncomfortable. I don't like it. But that's the work, right? That's the work that you, when people are saying you need to do the work, that's the work, is feeling all those feelings, processing through it, letting it metabolize, and then letting go of it so that we can move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I know for me, you know, personally, it's easier for me to be a clinician than it is for me to be a lot of other things, like a parent. You know, so that certainly is something I start to think about. And I really appreciate that, or identify with that. Like, it's easier, or very tempting, to fill our lives, my life, with those things that are like an easy win. Whereas for me, you know, sitting down and being present with my child is so much harder, or, you know, just brings up much more challenge and makes me aware of my own anger, or my own lack of patience, or my own lack of willingness to be present. And so I'm really identifying with and valuing what you're sharing.
And I think, you know, our children is a gift. We get to witness them today in a different lens. Like, I'm witnessing my children in a different lens. Like, I'm not avoiding them because they're loud or because they're obnoxious. Those are just screams of need. And it's no different than what we experience in the corporate environment, right? That it's just always like, I need this. Except with children, like, it's pure. They haven't had the weight of the entire world put upon them yet. And so I love just observing my children, because whenever I observe my children, I learn so much from them that, you know, their needs, they express it in a very basic, simplistic way. It's not buried behind all this indirectness, or all this, you know, like all this cultural norms. Like, they just are who they are, right? And that's what they need in that moment. And the more I study my children, the more I connect with them, the more I'm healing my own inner child, the more I recognize the inner child needs of others. And the more I go back to, like, how do I create that space to make my children feel safe, make them feel heard, make them feel seen? Because that's all they need.
I think that's really what all of us need. And I do struggle at times with how psychological safety is managed in healthcare, because, I mean, it's a hot topic of conversation. But my personal experience is that it's often not, it's often lip service, or it's discussed in, I mean, in the context of like patient safety or high reliability organization. And I really value patient safety, of course, but I don't necessarily see the translation, and maybe I don't know exactly how to engage with that to help promote translation to actually like valuing and listening to like the whole person and all of the people. I was talking with somebody earlier, and they shared with me, you know, the most important person in healthcare is actually the environmental services team, you know, the housekeeping team, people who are going in to patient rooms, interacting in patient waiting areas, seeing things on the ground at an eye level perspective that most clinicians, or even nurses and higher level folks, certainly leadership, are missing. So I've just sort of been grappling with, like, how do we create psychological safety in a really honest way that goes all the way, or maybe even starts there, like really empowers that whole group of healthcare workers, and then goes back up.
That's beautiful. I would say, just, you know, the people that work in environmental services typically, I guess, are less paid. That's I'm trying to be politically correct there. And when you're from that population, and my parents came from that population, I grew up in that population, you don't have physical safety. You don't have psychological safety. And I think one of the falsities in this world, in the space, the work that we do, you know, we're like, this is a safe space. The reality is there is no safe space, right? If you accept that, if you accept our mortality, if you accept that, that the safety can't be guaranteed, then you can actually be your true self, right? Like, otherwise it's lip service, like you said, right? And I think a lot of that work is just like, we're going to create a psychological safety space. You can't, because the system is so messed up. If we acknowledge that the system cannot be safe today, we can then acknowledge that it's broken. We can then acknowledge that we need to work on it. And then we can truly do the real work. Until then, back to lip service.
So it really just comes down to acknowledging and being willing to honestly talk about the problem.
Right.
And then going from there.
And I think it's really hard for people to hear that. You know, I've shared that many times and most people just refuse to accept it. It's like, of course I can create a safe environment for you. Like, as someone that operates in this world as a person of color, that, you know, that's different, that grew up in a traumatized space. Like, the reality is my entire life has never been safe. And I've gotten to the space where it's okay, because I don't need that safety yet, right? Like, I just need to grow beyond that space where I can create my own safety within myself. And that's the work. And that's where the challenge is, right? If you want to grow your entire organization, is creating that safety where everyone is creating safety within themselves, not necessarily from an external perspective.
Yeah, that is actually kind of a new concept, a new idea for me. So how might you think about that from an organizational perspective, empowering the people working within your system to create safety for themselves?
That goes back to doing the work, right? So this is, when I say do the work, it's the personal therapy time. It's the kind of uncovering, working on your traumas. And organizationally, there's going to be two components. One is the one-on-one work, right? Working with a therapist, clinician. I know that might be up to the person. As an organization, kind of that's the space I like to play in, is, you know, we have to kind of create space for people to do that. The pandemic did some of that, right? It created forced space. But up until the pandemic, we filled every little bit of space with stuff, productivity, you know, trying to get these metrics. And so I think as an organization, if we want to start healing, if we want to start growing as an organization, is literally creating space in the sense of geographic physical space, a space where people can get together and work, and temporal space, time space, like in their schedules, right? Do we need to fill all 10 hours with productivity time, right? How do we start creating those little breaks? Even the basics, I mean, just biological breaks, right? Like, people aren't getting that. And so if we aren't fulfilling just that basic survival need, we're not even close to getting to that thriving space, kind of a space where we're starting to grow and get beyond survival.
Yeah. And I guess I also start thinking about, as you mentioned, you know, some folks, especially people lower on the hierarchy, are definitely not paid as well as others. And so, you know, addressing that inequity and the financial disparity, I think, is really critical.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've heard some organizations moving towards giving employees like an hour or two a week or per pay period to engage in self-care, and that seems, I mean, it's small. I don't know that is enough, and also, I know that even that small amount seems overwhelming or impossible for some organizations. That particular policy suggestion is something that I brought up to my leadership and asked if we could do, because our national organizational body supports that. And unfortunately, they didn't think it was possible, which was disappointing to me.
You know, if I were to approach that step, rather than trying to push it organization-wide, I might start investing at the leadership level. Right, creating the space for the leadership team to work together, to work on their own stuff, right? Because when they're healed, then they can actually start seeing others as humans. When their own problems are now resolved, calming, and then they can start working organizational with others. But
Oh, thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I love that. It really speaks to the importance of acknowledging that all of us in the system are human and how important it is to care for each person. And I think also many leaders are struggling with isolation and burnout and the intense pressure of wanting the best for their employees and their patients and honestly not feeling like they can meet any of the things.
We're burning out our leaders today, right? I think there's just so much pressure from the world. And it's all this external stuff that keeps getting piled on. It's like it never ends, right? You went from George Floyd to the pandemic, now inflation and left, right. Like these things will never stop. These external things will never stop. And so the leaders want to just keep working harder at it. And that's never the answer, because there will be another thing that gets layered on top and you'll never have that capacity. And so there's pause, create space, create some resiliency within that leadership team to then step back and solve this problem. Because I think if you're able to kind of globally go back and look at this entire thing, then it's really just a little blip in the grand scheme of things. But in this moment, when we're micro-zoomed down to every single little problem, it's a gigantic mountain. It's impossible to climb. And so part of that leadership team growth is to be able to zoom back and look at the entire big picture. In this moment in time, this is a little tiny blip. It's a problem that can be solved. But right now, our heads are so far down.
Yeah, just allowing people the spaciousness to take a different perspective and to be, I guess, empowered by the limitations of the moment, but also like their connection to something that's so much larger than their daily experience. So what do you think it would look like if we collectively reimagined healthcare in a totally, you know, just like letting go of expectations and using our imaginations?
Well, I think we look at healthcare today, we try to solve symptoms, we try to solve the problems, the symptoms, right? And we never look at it holistically. Myself personally, you know, I had some sleep issues. And so I'm going through and I'm checking for sleep apnea, I'm taking Ambien, different medications. I'm trying to treat the sleep part as opposed to what's the holistic part. And my path led me to internalized trauma, right? So the trauma that I carry with me affected my sleep. And so once I started unlocking that, the body started just self-healing itself. I mean, the body is just this magical vessel that we have, right? This gift that's given to us. And a lot of it, it solves its own problems. And so the health system isn't designed to kind of create that psychological safety, that physical safety of the patient, which I think as a collective being, as a collective society, we have the ability to just start healing ourselves. And it's easier to just create solutions and procedures and treatments to try to treat things, which creates more kind of busyness. But if we start looking at ourselves as one collective organism, one society, one neighbor, like seeing each other as humans, I think we really can do a lot at a society system level, more so than we think. But
yeah, I mean, you're just inspiring me to think about, like, the body is a healing organism. It's designed to heal itself. And maybe we could use those same principles to create space for healing within, I mean, not just healthcare, but at a society level as well.
Well, even within my family unit, when I am calm and healthy, my children are calm and healthy, right? So the problems that my oldest child has with anxiety, I could solve that by, you know, getting medication for them, or I can also just calm myself, which then creates this environment, and it's actually working, right? The medication itself works, I'm not reporting that you just don't take medication, but simply changing the environment within my own household unit, I'm improving the health of my children just simply by working on myself. What if we bring that to the macro level, right? Within the cities and neighborhoods that we live in, what if our neighbors are loving and caring for one another? I think that level of stress reduces, and I think we'll all actually have time to heal and be more resilient.
Yeah. Really connecting human.
The pandemic doesn't help, right? I think the pandemic has created a fear of other people, right? Like, I'm afraid to get close to other because of COVID. I'm seeing less people because it's just this human interaction. And I think part of this growth out of this pandemic is sooner than later, we need to get back and become more humans again and become a society, become a neighborhood, become a community again. And I think that community is where we can start healing and start resolving a lot of these problems.
I mean, how do you think we could start doing that? Like in a practical way, reconnecting with community.
I remember working for it was an insurance company, but they had a community health element, right? It was probably the least funded part of their business. And ironically, I wonder if like, what if we funded that organization more, right? What if we 10x their funding so that they can do more work in this community health space? And so if the community is healthier, theoretically, we'd have less medical issues to cover with insurance, and it would just make the whole system better. And so we're trying to solve things at the individual level, transactional level, but what if we did zoom out into that macro level at the community level? And so more tangibly, like community health-wise, like we invest in education, we invest in creating space for mindfulness, we invest in different types of therapies and treatments. And so then as a community, you know, we can start moving that needle, and we'd have to get the data. And I think there's lots of health data analysts out there that would just love to see this information. I'm betting we would actually see the trends change if we start interacting at this community level.
Yeah. I mean, there already is some data that supports what you're saying. And I, of course, can't think of the citation, but I know one of the, I think it's like the leading cause of or predictor of mortality for several health conditions is actually isolation. And so, you know, people could be smokers or, you know, all these other kinds of problematic behaviors, high cholesterol, high blood pressure. But if they're integrated into a community or, you know, have people in their life who they engage with in a really meaningful way, the likelihood of dying from those conditions is significantly lower. And, you know, just from a really basic level, it does seem like that would be such a point of intervention for all of us.
Right.
And I guess I'm thinking similarly, what would it be like for our healthcare system if we did nothing other than create space for everyone to have lunch? You know, just like something so basic, but something that I think vast majority of people working in healthcare probably don't get on a regular basis.
Try to scram something down our throats and so we can run and get back to work. And
you know, it's about more than nourishment. More than physical nourishment, but like having the space, of course, for time off and time for self and the time to connect, I just think would be so powerful. And I recognize rather how powerful that has always been for me. And I can think of, you know, the job that I think of in my lifetime most fondly was also my absolute lowest paid job. But what it involved, among many other things, was time with people who cared about me and who I cared about and shared meals. And it was, I mean, it was so powerful. And I mean, it didn't feel like work either.
You know, part of a lot of this is coming from healthcare systems adopting lean manufacturing principles, kind of this productivity. And I think you and I had spoken about this previously about just the healthcare system, we see it as a machine. What if we flip the script around? What if the healthcare system is an organism? It's a connection of different neurons and cells and everything. Like it creates this organ, this biological organism. And you have to feed it, right? It's not a machine that we can continue to crank out and try to get metrics. And that's why there's resistance whenever you're suggesting things like creating time and space, is because if you look at it as a machine, then we're going to decrease productivity by taking away those hours not being productive. But if you look at it as a biological organism, it needs sleep and rest to not die, right? Mm-hmm. And so we are, in effect, killing our healthcare system by not giving it that rest it needs, not feeding it the nutrients that it needs. And by nutrients, that's the space, that's the feeding the time, creating those relationships, creating those bonds. All those things that we're not doing is, in effect, starting to kill the healthcare system.
I think we're really seeing that. So, I mean, how do we do that? I have a lot of questions here. So one question is, how do you convince people to let go of the lean model? Which I'm with you there. And then how do you start to treat healthcare like an organism and care for it and nurture it?
I think part of today's space in healthcare is innovation, right? Everyone's stuck in that same machine system, right? We've leaned everything out. There's nothing left to lean, right? So the system is operating in bare bones. You can't get any more profit out of the system, right? And we'll keep trying, right? We'll keep trying to maximize this profit. But eventually we are hitting a wall. And that's why you're seeing healthcare systems create innovation arms, right? They're trying to innovate to get that next 10x in productivity. The opportunity is to create a proof of concept, to carve out a chunk of the healthcare system and operate it in a different way. So if it's a large healthcare system, what if we carved out just a city or carved out a community and we operated this in isolation separately as an organism as opposed to trying to lean it out? My hypothesis would be this: the system actually would be more productive, would produce more revenue, you know, all the good metrics that we all want, right? We're trying to grow. I might say the outcomes of this system over here, my hypothesis would be like it would be better than the machine that we're building over here, right? That we're trying to just grind out and trying to squeeze out every last bit of value. So start small, right? Like again, like change happens in a macro level with a simple drop in the pond, right? You can drop a little and then the pond will ripple and effects will kind of spread across. And so we cannot change this machine into a human being overnight, but we can plant that seed and start transforming it that way.
So I'm curious if you have any words of encouragement for people trying to do that work or engaged in trying to create those ripple effects or that transformation for themselves or for their, you know, their small unit that they are connected to.
My words of encouragement, and I myself have lived through this for the past 2+ years, is to invest every little bit of resource, time, energy you have into healing yourself, into working yourself. I think so much of our energy today is spent trying to fix the world and trying to make this better. Start with yourself, right? It's the airline analogy, like put on your airbags before you help others. If you put in the work to work on yourself, the answer will be really simple, right? The answer is to just love. And it sounds very basic. I know I'm putting on my old hat again. My old hat would just say, you know, that sounds like a bunch of BS, right? But having being in this healed space myself, really the answer is just love. It's as simple as that. That will solve itself. And because I could say that, because at this point I can simply just, I'm letting go. I'm letting go. My ego's letting go. I'm not trying to control something that I can't. And that's the falsity of change management, is we think we can manage change. Whereas the reality is we cannot manage change. It will just happen by itself. And simply, like with the same correlation to my children, I cannot manage my children. I cannot make my child do this. But I can infinitely love them. And then the outcomes will be what it will be. And 99% of the time, if I'm just providing love in this environment, they're going to do the right thing. They're going to do the good stuff for them.
And it's so much rewarding. I know, so much more rewarding, at least for me as a parent, when I let go and I'm simply present and offering love. And I think within relationships, in community, in healthcare, with our colleagues, with myself, it's really transformative.
And I noticed when you said that, you know, you said letting go and then you took this deep breath. And it's that constant reminder. It's because it won't be automated, or it just won't happen all the time. We constantly have to remind ourselves to breathe. Let it go and continue to move.
Thank you. Well, my last question for you is just, what keeps you connected with joy in your own life?
I think I'm really enjoying this journey I'm going on, right? This healing journey and creating this space. And now to truly be able to spend time with my children as the person I've always wanted, right? It's self-healing, right? Like just to be able to kind of create the space for my children. And I can look back and say, just this is what I needed as a child that I never got. And so there's so much satisfaction and joy that comes into just like, I've changed it. This family tree has changed directions for the better with a simple change on myself, right? With starting this journey, doing this work on myself, the little investment I put into time and energy into doing this work is now going to ripple throughout my entire family tree. And we're starting to see conversations happen with the extended family. And they're just curious on what's happening, what's going on. And I'm starting to see, you know, this plant, this thing grow as I'm creating it. That's the joy for me.
Wow. Well, I'm so thrilled to hear that. I love that. And I guess for myself, for me, the simple things of like really being with my daughter is just so powerful. Her favorite thing right now is watching the clouds. And, you know, it's so simple. And yet it's so creative and so connective and so healing and powerful for me too.
Which goes back, I think, as children, we all have the tools to solve the world's problems. It was just until society told us that we didn't and imposed all these rules on us. Like your child just staring up in the clouds in awe. Sky's the limit. There is no limit for her. Until we come into a system that wants to put limits on everything.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Daniel. I really appreciated this. It was delightful.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Menders. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with a friend. And don't forget to head on over to mendinghealthsystems.com to get started creating cultural transformation for your healthcare team today. Let's create transformation magic.